Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. The new screensavers is brought to you by Hover. Register a domain name with Hover and build your online brand today. Go to hover.com/twit and save 10% off your first purchase. And by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com/NSS to save 20% off any order. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/NSS. Hands on with the iPhone X, an AI film editor, and the definitive cheeseburger emoji showdown. Live from the Twit East Side Studios in beautiful Petaluma, it's the new Screensavers! Episode 129, recorded Saturday, November 4th, 2017. I am Leo Laporte.
I am Megan Maroney.
And this is a big day.
Huge.
Huge. Because yesterday, both of us got something very exciting in the mail. iPhone X.
Mm-hmm.
X. Is that the plural of 10? Tens?
I guess. I don't know.
So this is the new iPhone 10, and we're going to give you kind of, we've only had it for a day, our capsule review. We'll take a look at it. By the way, Jason Howell, just to be fair, will also do his capsule review, the five best things about the Pixel 2 XL. He just got his. I have to say, I'm very excited about the iPhone 10. I was ready to hate it. I was ready to hate the notch, ready to hate the size, ready to hate the new controls. And then I fell in love. I fell in love.
I know, and you have been cranky about Apple in the last few years. So this is real love. This isn't just fake love.
I am fair about Apple. When Apple stumbles, and they have a number of times lately, I tell them. But, I mentioned before that I thought this was the AirPods were the epitome of Apple design excellence and a really impressive thing. And I have to say, I think Apple has hit a home run with the iPhone X. We'll talk about that. We're also going to take it apart. Because the folks from iFixit, our sponsor iFixit, are here. Kelsey Weber has pieces of an iPhone X, which she says they can put back together. They said Monday we're putting it back together. We shall see. What repairability score did it get? We're going to talk to two researchers, one from Stanford, one from Adobe, about something that my editors, our editors in the back room, are very nervous about. They're watching. Can a computer do as good a job editing video as a human being? Maybe artificial intelligence editing video. And then finally, we're going to really do something I think very important. And I'm sure you saw last weekend, Sundar Pichai, the CEO of Google, tweeting, yes, there might have been an error in the Google cheeseburger emoji. He said, we're going to first thing Monday, we're going to get on this, we're going to fix it. Should the cheese be on the bottom? He says, we will fix that as soon as we can get agreement, and there is no agreement. So we're going to do a taste test.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to put the cheese in a variety of locations and see how it tastes. That came out wrong. But then so did the cheese. So that's not what we're going to do exactly. We are going to do a taste test of cheeseburgers.
Yes.
And Megan and I will tell you which is the best tasting.
Mm-hmm.
And I forgot Scott Wilkinson's also here with a holiday gift guide. We're going to look at video gear you might want to get for the holidays. But let's start with the big news stories. There were a lot of news stories this week. Of course, the iPhone X, the biggest news story. It started shipping on Friday. People who were lucky enough like you to order it. And my wife, I have to be completely fair. This isn't my iPhone. So I got up, as many people did on, I'm trying to watch, I'm face IDing it. I'm getting it to wake up. Hello, iPhone. Oh, I like that. It's
you don't have beautiful. To talk to it. You know that,
You
right?
don't have to say anything?
No.
Okay. I got up and I had four screens and I was refreshing and refreshing at midnight a week ago on the 27th. And it finally got in after 20 minutes and ordered mine. It's not coming till the 17th. Lisa doesn't even get out of bed. She sleepily, 12:01, she goes, huh? She goes to the Apple store, orders the iPhone, goes back to sleep. Hers is coming, she thought, on the 7th, by the 10th. But by the way, you should check, because then she checked the Apple store, because Josh said, well, I think mine's coming sooner. And in fact, they delivered it a week early. You got up and got it on the 3rd.
Yes, I had two iPads, my MacBook, I had the
you
app
did the
open.
Same thing.
And the, yeah.
I thought it was I was trying too hard, and that's why they didn't let me buy it.
Mm-hmm.
But no,
it might be, I don't know. The jury's still out. It could be a conspiracy against you. They just don't want you to have it.
They said, is that Leo ordering? Let him hang for another 20 minutes. No, but you are, that's a Sprint phone, and I think
yes.
that's one of the reasons, because Sprint didn't have as much. By the way, Apple's results came out. They had a fabulous quarter and sold, 73.4 million iPhones, mostly iPhone 8s. So the iPhone 8 is a very big success. And yet, here they come a month and a half, 2 months later. They've got the iPhone 10, and I suspect they're... Do you think people who bought the iPhone 8 are going to feel bad?
I don't know. I mean, I love the iPhone 8. It was perfectly fine.
Was the logical successor to the 6, 6S, 7, mm-hmm. the 8. It just fit in that line.
But now, having this in my hand, this is what I remember. This is the perfect size of a phone, comparing the two.
The screen, because it goes all the way to the edge, is a little bigger technically than the iPhone 8. But the usability is a little, usable screen is a little smaller because it's got, here's the problem. You got, because you're using Face ID. The screen itself, when you get the controls on it, is actually maybe a little bit smaller than the iPhone 8. Mm-hmm. Here, I'll put mine next to yours with the calendar open. See, because of the notch, put it next to the iPhone 8. Because of the notch and the controls at the bottom, the usable screen is actually a little smaller than the iPhone 8 Plus and a little bigger than the iPhone 8. It's somewhere in between. But I'm going to agree with you. I think that that is actually maybe the ideal
size. In your hand, it is. But, I mean, you just saw, like, I tried to open it up and it didn't. Oh, there it went. Now it went. But it's not perfect. Just like, the thumbprint.
When we get
perfect.
To our review, I will theorize what's going on with Face ID. I have a theory because I've been playing with it. You also have a test.
I did. I have identical twins that belong to me. I didn't have to buy them anywhere.
Which one of them is this?
Okay. And he is one.
But they have very different hair.
They have different hairstyles, and some different facial hair as well. And Milo, his brother, put his face in it. And
okay, don't say what the result is, because we will show you. A little later on, the twin test. Even Apple said identical twins.
They said this is we're not like blowing the lid off of something. They said that this, and it makes sense because you don't want to grow long hair or shave or not shave and then have it not recognize you anymore.
I got some insight because I've noticed that it didn't unlock immediately in certain search circumstances. I want to talk about that. We'll get to our review in just a second. There is a controversy. Of course, there's a controversy on the face data. Apple says, no one, we're going to lock it up. You're going to record your face, but we don't release it out of the phone. We don't even send it back to Apple. All we have is some token information. The secure enclave, the very, very private secret part of the phone, stores the information about what your face looks like. Don't worry, nobody's going to get that information. Except it's not exactly true. The ACLU and the Center for Democracy and Technology are saying it turns out Apple does have an API for developers that lets a developer turn on these special cameras in the notch up at the top here. We're going to have to get used to this idea of opening the phone and then turning around. But that notch has a series of cameras, much like a Microsoft Kinect. There's an infrared light. There's a dot projection system. There's an infrared camera. There's the regular camera. That's all used. All those sensors are used to do the Face ID. What Apple does is allows developers access to those through an API. And some people are worried because the developers can. So, for instance, Snapchat would have much better Snapchat face stuff, you know, how it projects stuff in your face, if it could use these cameras. And the concern is there's no thing to stop Snapchat from then sending that face information back to the servers. In fact, they would, because that's how it works. So is that a privacy concern? What we don't know is, does Apple give them the full range of capabilities that they reserve from themselves with Face ID? I'm suspecting not. But if you're Snapchat, wouldn't you want access to these cameras to do a better job of the virtual masks mm-hmm. and things?
Well, it's interesting. We were talking to Mackenzie, who we're going to talk to later, and you said, does it do facial recognition? And she said, no, it does face scanning when we were talking about her technology. And that's interesting because a lot of us don't make that distinction.
Well, we got an AI expert here.
Yes. Like, what's it? Oh, I was like, oh, face scanning and facial recognition are very different.
Okay.
And we don't make that distinction often.
Apple does not give the authentication data to third parties. And they also say in their defense, and these are highly vetted third parties that have access to this API. We check them. We don't let them in the App Store, et cetera, et cetera. So Apple says nothing to fear here. We need to know more. How much information? They don't get the authentication information, but do they get the same exact data that Apple's using for authentication?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. So we'll keep an eye on that. You walk down the street and, you know, in many cities in the world, there's cameras. We know the Russians, at least, and I suspect other governments, are using face recognition with those street cameras. Your face is out there.
Right. You see a picture of a group, and it says, do you want to tag so-and-so or so-and-so? You know, Facebook knows what our face looks like.
I'm not so worried about the face. The fingerprint's a little different. And Apple says, no, same thing. We don't let anybody get that fingerprint information. You get tokenized information if you get anything. I think Apple works pretty hard to protect privacy, but we'll find out more. We'll find out more. This blew my mind. This is an interesting story from Motherboard about Bitcoin. Now, to understand this headline, the headline's kind of misleading. One Bitcoin transaction now uses as much energy as your house in a week. Many megawatts. But it's a little misleading. So in order to understand the story, you have to understand how Bitcoin works. Bitcoin, as you know, is what we call a cryptocurrency. And it's kind of brilliantly designed so that you can be a Bitcoin miner. In the early days of Bitcoin mining, you could just take a PC, run some special software, and it would, in effect, almost as if a coin came out the floppy disk slot, it would make a coin by solving computationally difficult problems, math problems. But the idea is that the Bitcoin was designed to create a pile of Bitcoins. It's going to stop in 2020-something. It's going to stop and say, that's it. That's the entire amount of Bitcoins. But it didn't want to just flood the world with all those Bitcoins at once. That would be inflationary. So what the creators of Bitcoin, the anonymous Satoshi Nakamoto, did is create a very sophisticated scheme where Bitcoin would be generated over a period of time by people who volunteered to mine, in effect, mine Bitcoin, generate Bitcoin using these mathematical challenges. But that it would also get harder. As more Bitcoin was made, it would get harder and harder and harder. And there were good reasons for this. I don't want to, it's complicated, but there were very good, this person was very smart. People were very smart. Very good reasons to make it harder and harder and harder. So right now it's very hard. If you wanted to mine Bitcoin in the early days, Steve Gibson famously, in the early days of Bitcoin, turned on, you know, a Bitcoin miner, and within a night, he had 50 Bitcoins, which would be worth $350,000 if he could just figure out where he put them.
He doesn't remember the wallet.
He doesn't remember where he's lost them. So it just popped out, 50 Bitcoin. Now, you couldn't do that today. People who mine Bitcoins today, in fact, we have a friend who lives in Arizona where power is very cheap, and he's able to, in his garage, you get a lot of specialized hardware with specialized processors, graphics units. It is expensive to buy the hardware, and most importantly, it's expensive in terms of energy to mine the Bitcoin. And you can only really do it where power is really cheap. Most Bitcoin miners are in China near hydroelectric power facilities where they get cheap or, in many cases, free electricity. Nevertheless, it is a very good point, a point I hadn't really thought about. Bitcoin uses a lot of power to create the Bitcoin database. So what Motherboard did, Christopher Malmo writing for Motherboard, is he divided the total amount of power that Bitcoin is using, 24 terawatt hours of electricity annually, Bitcoin miners, 24 trillion watts of electricity every year as they solve these problems. He divided it by the 300 transactions a day, 300,000 transactions a day, Bitcoin transactions, and came up with a number of 215 kilowatt hours of juice used per transaction. That doesn't mean the transaction uses that much, just that the total amount of power used to generate Bitcoin divided by the total number of transactions a day. means that, in effect, every Bitcoin transaction uses about 901 kilowatts. I mean, uses about 215 kilowatt hours of juice for each transaction. And the American, that's about a week's worth of American household power. That's a lot of power. It isn't per transaction, but it does raise the issue. I think it's a plot. I think Satoshi, now I figured it out. Satoshi Nakamoto wanted to destroy the planet Earth and wanted to create global warming. So what he did is he created this compelling thing that uses massive amounts of energy. By the way, that amount of energy is going to go up and up and up and up almost exponentially over the next few years. Is that a good thing?
Well, it would be great if they could use it in places where the power is free, like you were saying. Like, there's, we don't really know what to do with
it. But it's still using the power.
But we don't. We have in places where it's very windy and very sunny. There's extra power. We don't really know how to harness that and take it to the places where.
Did you see that last week that power was free in Germany?
It
was such a windy weekend in Germany. They have so much wind power. It generated more power than the country needed.
Yeah, it happens in Texas a lot, too.
They were reversing the meters. Yeah. And in effect, they'd pay you to use power. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think so much energy, really all this energy, every bit of energy we use ultimately came from the sun, right? Even if you use gas, with the sun created plants and dinosaurs, which got in a sludge.
What about wind energy?
Same thing. All of that wind comes from solar. Yes, absolutely. From solar heating of the climate creates winds. So it all ultimately, there's no energy in the entire Earth that didn't come from the sun, ultimately. And the sun hits us with so much more energy every day than we could use in years. So I guess energy's free. But it just bothers me that they're using so much energy for such a kind of dopey thing, Bitcoin.
Yeah. I mean, currency is also psychological, too. It's like if people don't think it's worth what it's, you say it's worth, it's, you know, it's not just math.
You know what else is imaginary? Donald Trump's Twitter account.
Oh, if only.
It was pretty funny. So it turns out after an investigation, it happened. I was on Twitter when it happened, and people were freaking out. Twitter has taken down the president's Twitter account. Real Donald Trump. He's taking it down. Everybody was freaking out. And then it turned out Twitter put it back up after, what, 11 minutes?
11 minutes, yeah.
This is so funny. Turned out it was an employee on his last day, or her last day, we don't know who it was, on her last day, who just said, you know, on the way out the door, let me just turn off the account. But what we've learned is there are hundreds of employees who have the ability to do that. Not anymore. Twitter's fixed that. We've implemented safeguards to prevent this from happening again. We won't be able to share all the details about our internal investigation or updates to our security measures. We take this seriously, and our teams are on it. Furthermore, even more to the point, those same employees who could take down his account, if you think about it, probably could tweet on his behalf.
They say they couldn't have. They say that they couldn't have. That's what Twitter says.
Okay.
But I don't know. And now they can't.
You could start a war.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, our politicians' dependence on Twitter is questionable, I think.
Yeah,
that's as much as I'll say. But it was interesting that, you know, that everyone got so excited about it and then it came back. And even Donald Trump tweeted that it was a rogue employee, and it was unclear from his tweet whether it was one of his
White House rogue employees.
Well, but it was a Twitter.
You got 140 characters. It's hard to say everything you want to say.
And this was a bad week because we're not even really talking about the Senate hearings, Twitter, Facebook, Google, like all sitting before the Senate just trying, not them, you know, their lawyers sitting before the
Twitter
hearing.
Twitter said a strange thing. They said this. What was it, like some small percentage of all the accounts were spam accounts?
Or bots, yeah.
I think it's more than half. I think they grotesquely underestimated it. But anyway, that's a story for another day.
We'll
talk about that tomorrow.
Probably tomorrow you'll talk about. Yeah.
Yep, promise. And of course, you talk about this stuff all the time. And if you could on Tech News Weekly, TNW, every Thursday with Jason Howell, if you could get the Twitter employee, that would be a scoop.
Yeah, I'll work on that. If you're out there watching right now,
it's good for you.
Twit.tv.
Now, admittedly, there's some places you couldn't get a job now, but I think there's other places where they would hire you in a jiffy.
We're not going to pay you for the interview, but we would love to talk to you.
I will pay $100.
You can't do that. You can't. That's not. We're journalists.
$200. The problem is, how would you verify that that's the employee?
Yeah. I did it. It was me.
There are people on Reddit who are saying, please, you know, there's a section where you say, we want an AMA. We want to ask me anything. And that's the number one person they want an AMA with is the Twitter employee. You know, that's like as you leave, flipping the lights off right. as you leave the door. It's just like, you know, my last day here, what could I do that would really be fun? Oh. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, our first look at the iPhone X. We've had it for a whopping 24 hours. I will demonstrate. You know what I'm going to do is I'll redo my Face ID. I'll show you how that works because it's really cool. And we have a video that Megan shot of the infrared view of that. Or the is it infrared? Yeah, the infrared view of that. It's pretty cool what's going on.
It doesn't hurt.
Didn't?
No.
No pain?
Shooting lights at your face doesn't hurt.
We will also interview the iFixit folks who've taken it apart and find out what's inside. What's inside. And, of course, as always with iFixit, who is we're proud to say a sponsor of the show, as always, they'll give us a repairability score. We've seen the AirPods have practically nothing, zero repairability score. Is the iPhone X better? Can't be worse. Our show today brought to you by Hover. This is where I register all my domain names. If are you one of those people, I know there are a lot of you watching who, you know, you get an idea, you say, I'm registering that domain. It costs 10 bucks a year, no big deal. I'm going to register that domain, and then someday somebody's going to give me a lot of money for it. If you're one of those people, or maybe, here's a good one. If you right now, your email address is at gmail.com or at yahoo.com or worse, at AOL.com, you should have an email address that's like at yourlastname.com, right? Hover is a great place to go and do that. Not only .com, .org, .biz, .design, they've got how many? 400 total domain extensions. .ninja, yes, you could get leo.ninja. I could get leo.pizza. It goes on and on. .tech, .art, .yoga. If you're a yoga business and you don't have, you know, yoga business. Oh, look, I can get Leo Pizza. Somebody already has Leo Pizza. What? Leo Pro, Leo.expert, Leo.democrat, Leo.republican, Leo.space. Ooh, that's expensive. Leo.attorney, even more expensive. Lisa has Lisa.ceo because she's the CEO of the company. She'd get mad if I got Leo's. Leo.engineering, I like that. Leo.boutique. Anyway, I can go on and on. Hover has the best-in-class customer support team. What I love about them, unlike other registrars, you don't have to go through 50 pages of upselling to buy a domain name. It's quick. It's easy. They build in Whois privacy automatically on domains that allow it, which means you know they know you want it. They're not going to give you an upsell. It's built into the price. You really ought to get that. Hover's Connect feature makes it really easy to set up your domain name with a host or an email system or a website builder. So it's just point and click, boom, boom, boom. But if you like to go in the DNS settings, I think they've got the best DNS manager of anybody. I use them all the time to reroute email. The other day, I wanted to reroute my email from one provider to another because I have a custom domain name, as I said, everybody should. And one of the benefits is you move to a different email provider. You don't have to tell your correspondents the new domain name. You just move it. It does the forwarding for you. I can go on and on. I want you to try Hover. Go to hover.com/twit. Start building your online brand today. If you're a designer, imagine having, you know, your name.design instead of the generic.com. It's just awesome. Get 10% off your first purchase. hover.com/twit. We thank Hover for their support. I think it's the new thing, right? Is to, like, we have a sponsor, Lighthouse, right? They got light.house. Instead of lighthouse.com, they got light.house. Just, I love that. hover.com/twit, 10% off your first purchase. All right. I feel it's a little unfair because, after all, we've only had this for a day. But I think we can give you first impressions as long as you understand that the full iPhone X reviews will be coming later. Many of the iPhone X reviews you read online this week were with people, even people like Nilay Patel, only had it for a day. Only four journalists got it for a week ahead of time. Renee Ritchie got it for a day. So we're kind of in that ballpark. And I actually slammed people who review phones after one day of use. So I want to be very clear. This is not a review. But this is some of the things we've learned so far on the iPhone X. First of all, I guess general impressions. What do you think?
I like the size. We talked about this before. The screen is the same size. The Face ID works most of the time, and it's really nice. The whole operating system is slightly different. You swipe up to open it, and then if you want to see, you know, you swipe down to see the notification center, which is very different from the iPad, different from the other iPhones. But I I like this. Once I started trying to use my iPhone 8 again, I realized, like, this seems to be the way that you do this. I mean, there's certain features because you use, you know, there's no home button. That's obviously why there's a big change. And so you begin to remember, like, the reasons you use the home button. Like, if you want to delete all those apps, and then you used to, you know, you press hard on them, and then the little X's, and they shake, and then, you know, you're done deleting apps.
How do you get out of that?
So then there's that little done button right up there. So, I mean, they really have thought of the way that you use the home button, and I don't miss it.
You can't, yeah, I don't either, although some other things have changed. For instance, if you don't have the home button, how do you invoke Siri with a physical touch? You do it by turning, pressing the on-off switch. So let me look at the phone and then press the on-off switch to invoke Siri. But then if that invokes Siri, how do you turn off the phone?
Mm-hmm.
So what I ended up doing was, how do I turn this phone off? And Siri will tell you.
Okay.
No, Siri won't tell you if you don't ask it right.
I Googled it because I also didn't know. You have to hold the left button,
yeah,
the up
Siri
or
would,
down.
Yeah, if you stop talking, I can ask Siri. This is why I hate phone, you know, voice recognition. How do I turn the phone off?
I don't understand.
Oh, shut up, Siri.
Yeah.
You Googled
Can
it.
Can I tell you instead of asking Siri?
Yes, tell me,
you
please.
You hold the left up or down button.
You hold
the volume
both buttons.
At the same time. You
now,
can do
what
up or down.
Be careful, don't hold it too long, because I held it too long and the SOS started going off. Roop, roop, and it was about to make an emergency call. Notice that's one of the choices here. Also, medical ID. And by the way, if you haven't filled that out, fill it out in the health app. Because first responders know that it, well, I hope they'll know soon enough anyway, that if you hold both those buttons, you'll get that medical ID and they can look up your blood type, your next of kin, that kind of thing. But here's the shut to turn, you know, slide to power off. That's at the very top. So that's one trick. Same thing with a screenshot. You press and hold both briefly and it'll do a screenshot. And by the way, that's the new feature, which you can, that's an iOS 11 feature. You can edit the screenshot. It shows it there for a while. Let me talk about Face ID a little bit, though. In fact, I want to show you how you do Face ID.
Okay.
One of the things you can do with Face ID is require attention. Did you turn that on or not?
Yes.
So that means you have to actually be looking at it. That makes it a little bit more secure, but it also means you have to physically look at it, and then it will unlock. It will unlock. She's being really recalcitrant right now.
Yes.
It will let's do it again. What? It's not unlocking. So that's another thing I noticed. So if it doesn't unlock, you can, and I'm going to change my code so you can show my code. You can swipe up and then enter your passcode and it will unlock. But here's what I think I noticed. I'm guessing on this. The first time I did it without my glasses, because I trained it with my glasses, it didn't recognize me. So it asked for the passcode. I entered the passcode. The next time it did. The first time I did it with headphones on during the radio show, it didn't recognize me, so I entered the passcode. And then it seems to have done better. Same thing with studio lighting. So I think what's happening, and Apple did say it gets better in time, I think what's happening, see, it learned now, is that once you try it and authenticate, it will say, oh, I get it, that's the new look or that's the change or whatever. By the way, one more feature. Let me show you again. When you do this and you unlock it, see, I'm looking at it. Now, it doesn't automatically go to the home screen. You have to swipe up after you unlock it to get to the home screen. You get used to that. In fact, you get used to it so much that you don't even really think about unlocking
No.
it, right? You
Yeah.
just it's just unlocked when you when
Right.
You
don't have to wait, really.
You don't even think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the swipe up is a natural thing.
So requiring attention is default turned on.
It is, but you can't turn it off.
I just turned it off because why? I mean, I don't think anyone's going to be holding me down and I'm going to be looking away.
That's what it is to protect you. That's what it is to protect you.
I mean,
and I would guess it's a little easier without it. Should we train it? You want me to do a little?
Yeah, train it.
Yeah, I can't remember what I'll have to do to train it.
You go to the settings, then you go to Face ID and passcodes.
Okay, so let's go to Face ID and passcode. There it is, right there.
Yeah.
You have to enter your passcode.
Okay, now everyone saw your passcode.
No, I know, and I said I'm going to redo this. And these are the settings, which are very useful. iPhone Unlock, Apple Pay. You can. What are you going to use it for? This is the thing you were talking about, Megan. Require attention.
I turned that off.
You leave
it on.
Turn that off.
I might hold you down later on.
Right.
Your phone.
Attention aware features. True depth will check for attention before dimming the display or lowering the volume of alerts. Isn't that kind of interesting? But let's reset the Face ID so that we can. We can do it again. Okay? Is that it?
Mm-hmm.
Set up Face ID. So watch this. Now you're going to have to shoot over my shoulder, Jerry. So it's actually even easier than training the fingerprint. You press the button, And now it's got a picture of me. And you see this circle? I need to tilt the phone, or I'm sorry, tilt my face to fill up the circle.
It's good neck exercises as well if you
it
keep
is.
Doing it.
It seems
follow
like...
the arrow. You got some circle to fill in over there.
There. Now, once it's filled in, it's done. Now, you do this twice. It's actually, once you figure out, you go left, you go right, you go up, you go down. It's actually pretty easy to fill in the circle. And once you've done that, it's set up.
That's all that there is.
It's pretty easy. And then it continues to learn, which I've now untaught it. So I'm just curious, if I go here, will it recognize me? Yeah, it does, because I trained it in this environment. Now, by the way, this works. I tried it in the middle of the night when the lights are off. It works because it's show this video, right? You did this, right?
In the dark.
It will show. So this is you in the dark setting it up?
Yeah, so that's what is shooting at your face.
So you see the dots. That's doing a face map. This is slowed down, obviously.
No, that's actually how slow I did it.
Yeah. Did you have to have your eyes so wide?
Yeah. It says I'm going to use this for my sci-fi movie.
It has an infrared camera, which you don't see. It's invisible light. But the camera and the infrared light can see each other. And the dots are infrared as well. You don't see those. So that's why it works at night. It works in the dark. I tried it at the Bruno Mars concert last night. It worked. I was like blown away.
You know how else it works? On my twins.
Okay. Now, Apple did warn event. They said there is 1 in a million chance that somebody will be able to unlock your phone using your face, with one exception, identical twins. And you just happen to have a pair.
I just happen to have a pair of identical twins.
Yeah.
And one of them, who's not here, put his face in it. And he has long hair. He has a bit of a mustache. And then his twin brother, who has short hair and is clean shaven, he can open.
Come here, Huck. You're Huck or you're Milo?
Okay. So you can't tell them apart, and you've known them since before they were born.
Mom can. I know. I've actually held these babies in my arms. You and Milo were crying your eyes out, and Jennifer and I were trying to go to sleep, while your mom and dad were out partying.
That's true.
I'll never forget that. Yeah. So anyway, let's see the video because.
Okay. Do you have that? There we go. So there's Milo's hair, and he tested it. It opens for him.
So that's Milo.
Yep.
And then now, Huck, you're going to try this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so it was registered to Milo.
Yes,
that right?
It was registered to Milo's face.
Okay.
And then...
Twitter's down. some rogue employee. So Milo is unlocking. He has the long hair.
Uh-huh.
And it unlocked. So it's trained to Milo.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Huck, you've got a very different hairstyle, different facial hair, but your facial features the same.
Yeah.
Oh, boom. Right away, unlocked it.
But it makes sense because you wouldn't want to grow long hair.
Yeah, but you're screwed, man. You can't. You can't use this phone.
Yeah. Well, he. First of all, he's 12, so I'm not going to buy him a $1,000 phone.
You're not 12. He's taller than me.
He's 12.
All right.
And
or
it's
so
not
he
supposed,
says.
It's you held them when they were babies.
Oh yeah,
remember?
That was 12 years ago. Okay.
And they also, you're not supposed to use it with kids under 13.
Yeah, but he's still going to... Next year, you're screwed, okay?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
You're going to have an iPhone 8 for the rest of your life. Sorry about that. Thank you. Thank you.
Appreciate Thank you, Huck.
So that is... So if you're an identical twin, you are kind of left out. There's another thing that I miss. With the fingerprint ID, you could have somebody else train their fingerprint. So I let Lisa train her fingerprint so she could unlock my phone when she needed to use it or whatever. You can't do that. One person and one person only with the face ID. So that's kind of a limitation, mm-hmm. right?
Why
Although
do you
they could
do
give
that?
The other person... Your 6-digit code.
Right.
And that's the other thing. You will be entering that code maybe more often than you used to, just because the face ID and so forth needs to, sometimes doesn't work or whatever. But I found this actually works every bit as well as I had hoped. I don't really miss the home button, but I've used phones for years like this Galaxy Note 8 that doesn't have a physical home button on it, right? It's all screen. That's not the end of the world. What do you think of the screen now? Let's talk about this. This is Apple's first time using an OLED screen. You like it?
I love it. I mean, I can even compare it to the iPhone 8, and you can just tell that how much brighter it is.
It's not merely brighter. It's really... it feels like it's painted on. It mm-hmm. really is crisp and solid and clear. The colors are vivid, but not too vivid. You know, one of the things you could do is compare this to, for instance... The next best screen out there, I think, which is the Note 8 screen. And in fact, what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you the same icon
You want to see it on the iPhone 8 too?
No, but I'm going to show you the same icon, unless you have Authy installed. Do you have Authy installed? So those reds are somewhat different. The top red is the Samsung OLED. I think it's a little like pinker and brighter. I think the red on the iPhone is actually more accurate. And I think that's what you're going to find. If you just use a Samsung phone or any OLED screen by itself, it's bright, it's powerful, it's punchy. You don't really know if the colors are 100% accurate or not. But I have to say, I think the colors, and I know Apple's calibrated this. It's calibrated to the P3 spec, which is a very wide color gamut. I think the colors are more accurate. I think that it's a vivid screen, and it's a very solid screen. This is, until I got it, I thought the Note 8 was the best OLED out there. I think this is a better OLED. And this is, by the way, made by Samsung, same company, but to Apple's specifications. So it's smaller in the hand. You like that? Mm-hmm. I like it, too. I mean, I have bigger hands than you, but it doesn't bother me. I kind of like a smaller phone.
It fits
in your pocket very easily. Let me, like that. You probably don't keep your phone there.
No, I don't.
You'll want to keep a case on it because it's very expensive to repair. What other things are new? I talked to a blind user, and I was curious. He's got an iPhone 8, and I said, well, how well is that going to work with these new features? He says, you know what? They have figured out gestures to make it as easy. And he said, I feel very confident that blind users will be very comfortable with this new user interface. There's a whole bunch of new gestures, and we're going to talk about this on iOS today. It's going to be one of my tips. We're going to do an iPhone 10 rundown on iOS today. But there's a new feature in the settings that is assistive touch. It's kind of interesting. You have to go into general and accessibility, and you'll see there's a new entry here, touch accommodations, that have a number of features having to do with the touch. Actually, that's not... there it is, assistive touch. There's some really interesting things they're doing now with touch, including the ability to create a new gesture. So if I wanted to, I could create a gesture that I could then tie to a feature. So I like this idea. So this is a custom gesture. Custom gestures allow you to record gestures that can be activated from custom in the menu.
So that's in iOS 11, or that's just on the iPhone 10?
Well, some of this is very specific to the iPhone 10. Single tap, double tap, long press, 3D touch. I feel like there are some things you need because there's no more home button, no more physical button. For instance, on the iPhone 8, you triple tap the home button to turn on the voice.
Mm-hmm. Voiceover.
Voiceover.
Yeah, that's what I do.
Yeah, but there's no home button to triple tap here, but they now have some assistive touches that allow you to do that. I feel like they've got some very good features in here that, and I, of course, I'm not blind, so I'm not a good judge of this, but having talked to somebody who's vision impaired, he said, no, I went in and I set this up. I had some help from the Apple employees. I feel like this will be every bit as easy to use. That's good news for blind users.
Yeah. And again, we just got these 24 hours ago.
Brand new for us.
I know with Touch ID, sometimes it worked really well in the beginning, and then it started to work badly. So maybe
yeah,
the
we
Face
don't know.
ID will start working
there may be,
not so
there may
well.
Be decay, although I'm encouraged by the fact that it did kind of learn new ambient issues and compensate for them over time. Great screen, great feel. This is you got the silver one, I got mm-hmm. the silver one. You have a red case on yours because you like
rose gold.
Mm-hmm. But it does remind one on the side there of the original iPhone, the way it's curved here. This is not really silver, it's a white back. The silver is the chroming on the edge, and I think that's quite nice. The camera, of course, is very similar to the iPhone 8 camera, except they have optical image stabilization and then a telephoto now, and it's a little bit wider, so it does a little bit better in low light. I've been very happy with the performance. Because it has that notch with the sensors in the front, you can do some interesting things. We saw the Animoji, an animated poop, which introduced the show. I think probably the best... most appropriate introduction mm-hmm. ever. You want me to do one of these for you here?
Absolutely.
Yeah, let's do an Animoji.
There's also Animoji Karaoke, which has been sweeping the nation.
Oh, I haven't seen that
you
yet.
You haven't? Oh, my goodness. McCracken started that.
Let me be a unicorn. Okay. And I guess what I could do is I could sing along. So notice as I turn my head, the unicorn turns. Can you get the shot over the shoulder a little tighter? Yeah. As I tilt my head up, it goes up. As I tilt my head down, left, right. And when you talk, the lip sync is very good. Hey, I'm talking here. We're going to go home and I'm going to make waffles. And that kind of thing. You record it. You can save it. Send it via iMessages. But you can also save it as a movie, which you could share with somebody. I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, you can't send. You have to save it if you want to send it to someone.
What? I didn't hear you.
If you want to send it to someone on Android, you have to save it.
Yes, but it saves as a movie, which is fine. And you can send it via MMS. Oh, look at this. Oh, yeah. That is the most silly, trivial use of some very sophisticated face recognition technology. But you can also use it in the camera, and that's kind of cool. So you now have, in selfies, those portrait features that you had in the back of the camera previously. So, for instance, and in fact, I think it probably works a little bit better. Let's do the stage light. And it's now taking the background out of that shot. And I think it does maybe even a little bit better job because it has the dot projector and the face recognition. That's not a great picture, but you get the idea. I'm looking for flaws. I'm looking for defects. As far as I can tell, there's only two flaws. One is, of course, no headphone jack. Sorry, Apple. That's not courage. That's dopey. But, okay, I get it. The other is it's a lot of money. $1,000 for the base model. We both bought the 256 gigabyte model. $1,149 plus tax. That is the most expensive phone I've ever bought. And I hate to say it, but I think it might be worth it. If you've got the bucks, this is a great phone. We'll have full reviews, more information. And next Tuesday on iOS Today, you and I will show some tips. I'll do some more with that assistive technology, show you how that works. Let's do this now, though. Let's take it apart. Kelsey Weber is here from iFixit.com. Let's find out what's inside. Kelsey, how does iFixit, by the way, sponsor of the show, how does iFixit get this phone so quickly?
So we go through the same process that everybody else does. We have to pre-order it and hope that the shipping date that we get is earlier, just like everybody else. But what we do is we send half of our teardown team all the way over to Australia to beat the international dateline. But we still have to wait in line at the Apple store and we still have to, you know, go through that whole process. But we do go to Australia to tear it down first. And then I wait for the next day and intercept our packages at UPS and then do a tear down with the video team here at home.
So you've taken apart two iPhone X so far.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Man. But
so far. We've got a few more. We're going to do some parts testing and things with, but wow. We had a successful teardown. Nothing was damaged, so we'll be able to put these things back together for sure.
That's the good news. All right.
Yeah.
So were there any surprises inside?
Yeah. So the design changes that you see on the outside extend to the inside as well. You were talking about the True Depth camera system that brings you Face ID. And so this is...
Oh, there's the module. Wow.
Yeah. So this is the module that's hiding underneath the notch up at the top of the screen. And this has your dot projector and your infrared camera that reads all the scans of your face that it does. So this is what's hiding under there. So I wouldn't hate on the notch so much because it's bringing you some really cool tech. And beneath that, or to what keeps that OLED, you know, the new display running so quickly is a huge battery. So here is the new battery in the iPhone X.
It's two
and
batteries.
It's a weird shape. It's two. So it's a dual cell battery. So to keep all these... the screen running really fast, that A11 chip going, Apple had to figure out how to fit a battery that's bigger than the battery in the 8 Plus into a phone that's around this, you know, closer to the size of the 8. So they had to get pretty creative with some geometry, and that's why you see the two-cell battery here. But one good thing that they did is they put adhesive strips, removable adhesive strips on the back of this battery. So if in the future you want to go in and do a DIY replacement of your battery, you've got some pull tabs that'll make it easier to remove.
So is this easier to replace the battery than it would be in the iPhone 8 or previous, like the iPhone 7, recent previous iPhones?
So Apple's been keeping screen and battery replacements, at least we believe in, easy as far as their design goes. So they have the same removable, you know, adhesive pull tabs in the 8. I thought that this battery was actually easier to get out, but those pull tabs are, they're really tight. So you need to be careful, but it's totally doable. Just a few steps. You can get in there and you can replace it yourself for sure. And oh, yeah.
The motherboard, the logic board, is also a weird shape. I guess because everything now has to fit in that tiny puzzle space.
Yeah, they had to really make everything compact. Here's that logic board there. And it normally the board is a whole lot longer, but what they did here is they folded it in half, soldered it together, so that way it fits in right next to that battery, because really they needed that bigger battery and they needed to figure out how to fit everything else in there together. So that's the that's there. Unfortunately, you know, having this folded over logic board will make any repairs to the logic board very difficult, but Apple did do a good job putting those strips on the battery and making the display open in a way that'll be easier for users to go in and remove that themselves. So there's no, they've got all the cords on the backside laid out in a way that don't cause any, you know, booby traps for you to get into the phone. So there were a lot of repairability aspects that Apple did keep in mind for the new design.
It almost feels like this is new from Apple. Like they took some maybe a lesson from what you guys have told them and made this more repairable than previous. Is this more repairable than the iPhone 8, for instance?
So they got the same repairability score, and we saw a lot of the same, you know, repairability features. And it isn't necessarily new for Apple, but the design and the internal design actually reminds us of the original iPhone,
really?
Which is kind of, so if you go, we've got it on the teardown. We do a side-by-side comparison of this logic board compared to the original one, and they look very similar. And we also saw some of the design elements on the iPhone 10, the curved edge, the metal frame that reminded us of the OG iPhone. So it's kind of cool to see all this, the design and iterations kind of come full circle for the iPhone 10.
The OG is original.
So could you put with all those pieces, can someone put it back together? I know you guys are going to try to put it back together, but can an average person put it back together?
Absolutely. So what we do these teardowns, and then we go back and we write repair guides for all of the, you know, vital components in your phone. So you can go in and you can replace the logic board, the cameras, all of these things. Once you get the display open, it's just a flick of a spudger, undo some cable connectors, carefully get those ribbon cables out. But I didn't have as hard of a time with the 10 as I did with the iPhone 8. So with our repair guides, you can go step by step all the way through and do most repairs yourself.
Just a flick of the spudger.
It's like from the flick Rocky Horror Picture Show. It's just a flick of the spudger.
Yeah.
It's interesting what they get on that logic board, though. There's the A11 Bionic chip. There's a neural engine, the M11 Motion Co-processor. And for Apple never reveals how much RAM, but you figured out there's 3 gigs of RAM on there.
Yeah, so we work with a few other collaborators to come together and do this chip ID. And we also depend on our repair community. So when this teardown goes live, if you're into chip ID or you have some piece of information about what might be on these logic boards, you can go into the guide and comment and let us know, send us an email and give us a source, and we'll integrate all those comments and feedback into the guide. That's kind of one of the cool things about iFixit is that all the repair guides are wiki-based. And so you can go in, add comments, and help edit to make these guides and teardowns better.
So normally you would look at the chip and there'd be numbers on it, but those aren't always telling you what's in there, right?
No, and sometimes, I mean, you look, you can find you zoom in, look at the number, try to type it in or look it up, and the knowledge just isn't out there. So, but thankfully, we collaborate with ChipWorks and some of these other companies that work with us to share knowledge and get everything identified.
That's one of the things I love about these teardowns is really, because Apple is pretty secretive about what they're doing. It's one of the reasons they obfuscate the numbers or use strange part numbers. But you guys always seem to figure out what's in there. And I, for one, like to know how much RAM's in there. Apple says, you don't need to know that, but I want to know. So 3 gigs of RAM. You know, there are now Android phones. The new Razer phone has 8 gigabytes of RAM. But the way iOS works, 3 gigs is plenty. That's a lot of RAM.
Yeah.
Fix-It score, your iFixit repairability score. What do you give it? It's from a 0 to 9.
9
is 10. 10 is ultimately repairable. 0 is throw it out when it's done. I think the AirPods got a 1. They were barely barely fixable.
And the Essential phone got a zero. Didn't the Essential phone get a zero?
But I think the AirPods also got a zero.
Zero?
As well.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
Because, I mean, there's really no way to get in there and service it without breaking it. But also, you know, that's a tiny device. It's hard to make those repairable, although it's possible.
So zero is pretty low. How did the iPhone 10 do?
So the iPhone 10 got a 6 out of 10.
That's pretty good.
It is. It's pretty good, right on par with the iPhone 8. You know, again, we got those battery pull tabs, an easier opening procedure so you don't screw up any cables when you go to replace the screen. But on the downside, that glass back, although it brings us wireless charging, if you break the back panel, you have to go through and completely, you know, take apart the phone in order to access that back panel. So here's what it looks like completely disassembled.
That's the back. That would be the back part that you
You've got
buy.
Your Qi wireless here, and then this is the back glass that you'd then need to, you know, remove the bezel to get
So that's
the glass
why
off.
Apple says if you break the back, it's $500.
Yeah, any repairs outside of the screen, $560 to get in there and replace it. So, I mean, get insurance, protect yourself. But if you are out of warranty at any point, then check our website because we'll have all the guides on how to do that.
And by the way, in the previous fingerprint screens, the Touch ID screens, there was a big issue about fixing the screen because it would make the Touch ID enclave less secure. Apple was disabling Touch ID if you had a third party replace the screens. This doesn't have that problem.
No, but what we are going to go and investigate is, like, say you crack your screen and you go in and you don't want to go to Apple Service Provider. You want to go somewhere else to get a replacement screen. You know, what does that mean as far as your Face ID technology goes? Do you have to replace your entire, you know, camera system? What needs to be done? Because before, if you cracked your screen, you would have to keep your original home button in order to keep access through Touch ID. So we're going to be going through and doing parts testing to see what the implications of that are moving forward.
It does look like it'd probably be a good idea to get Apple Care Plus. I never do. I self-insure, which means I'll be looking up how to fix it on iFixit.com.
So we should say that you're going to put it back together, but we don't recommend people just taking it apart to put it back together because then it wouldn't be waterproof anymore. And also
we've got to fight through some adhesives, but the adhesives are there for waterproofing. So if your phone isn't broken, isn't acting up, or even like if you have a cracked screen and the crack is just in the corner and it's like just cosmetic, just live with it. You know, don't try to fix something that's not broken because you would be removing the waterproofing and things like that.
And get a case.
Yes.
For sure, get a case.
And don't drop it.
And really try not to drop it, even though it's slippery. Try not to drop it. Hey, it was really great to talk to you. Thanks for joining us again. Kelsey Weber from iFixit.com, the kings of repairability, the repair guides to the world. We're really glad to have you on the show. Thanks, Kelsey.
Thanks for having me. Bye.
Coming up, can AI edit video faster than a speeding bullet? Yeah, faster than a human anyway. We'll find out next. But first, we continue our holiday gift guide. Our home theater geek, Scott Wilkinson, has his top picks for AV gear. Watch.
Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek and editor of avsforum.com. Now is the time for holiday shopping. And if you're looking for audio-video equipment, I've got some suggestions for you, especially if you're interested in the greatest value or bang for the buck. Let's start with TVs. My favorite bang for the buck TV is from Vizio. It's their top-of-the-line P-series, and it comes in three sizes, 55, 65, and 75 inches. Now, I suggest getting the largest TV that you can fit in your room and that you can afford, and these Vizios are quite affordable. The 55-inch is only $1,000, and it has all the bells and whistles. It has high dynamic range, 4K resolution, of course, and not only high dynamic range HDR10, which is the sort of default format, but also Dolby Vision, which is becoming more and more important. The 65-inch is $1,700, but on Vizio's website, you can pick it up for $1,550. The 75-inch is pretty expensive at $3,500, but if you can afford that and you can go that big, man, you will be seriously impressed. Now, most of you know that the sound coming from a TV is pretty bad, is almost universally unacceptable, in my opinion. So I recommend at the minimum that you get a sound bar to go with it. And here again, Vizio really comes through with bang for the buck. They have several different sizes depending on the size of your TV. I'm recommending in particular the SB3621, which is a 2.1 system that is two front channels and a subwoofer, a separate wireless subwoofer, for $150. Quite amazing, actually, and really surprisingly good sound. Now, if you wanted to spend an extra $100 and go $250, you could get the SB3651, which gives you also the surround speakers, actual surround speakers, wireless, that go behind you or to the sides and give you a true surround experience. And that's only, again, $250. Both of them are let you cast audio to them as well. They're what Vizio calls smart cast, which is, it includes Chromecast built in. So next up the chain, if you want to be a little more sophisticated, you might want to shop for an audio video receiver. My favorites are from Denon. And the one that I've picked for bang for the buck is the AVR S730H, which lists for $479. It's a 7.2 channel receiver, which means you can put seven speakers around you and up to two subwoofers. Or you can also do Dolby Atmos immersive audio, which puts five speakers around you and two speakers overhead. And that gives you a truly three-dimensional sound field that is really quite remarkable. You could also get the Sony STR-DN1080. That's a little more expensive at $600, but it also gives you this 7.2 or 5.1.2, five channels plus two channels above for Atmos. And it uses Google Cast. CNET called it a better sounding receiver, but it's a little more expensive. So next, I want to tell you about UHD Blu-ray players. This is the new disc format, Ultra HD. And the one I recommend is the Sony UBP-X800, which sells for $200. And it has excellent upscaling. It does not do Dolby Vision, which is one drawback. But for $200, I can hardly complain. If you can spend $550, my very favorite Ultra HD Blu-ray player is the Oppo UDP-203. It's pretty expensive, but it does absolutely everything except streaming. Now, for streaming, I recommend the Apple TV 4K. This is their brand new streamer, which lists for $179 for 32 gigabytes or $199 for 64 gigabytes of storage. And it's really, really good. It does HDR, high dynamic range in HDR10 and Dolby Vision. The main problem with it is that it doesn't automatically switch to whatever the content is, 24 frames per second, 60 frames per second, standard dynamic range, high dynamic range. This is a real problem, which is being addressed in the next version of the operating system, tvOS 11.2. But I really like the Apple TV. All of its content is from the iTunes store, and it's at a flat rate, so you can get the highest quality that your TV can handle without having to spend extra money. Fantastic deal there. So that's it for me. If you want to read more about what I'm doing, you can go to avsforum.com. Happy holidays.
Thank you, Scott Wilkinson. All right, they're cooking the burgers. In just a bit, we're going to really nail this down. What is that, a Joe Foreman grill? Ooh.
I guess it is. They look like real meat burgers, don't they?
Look good.
What,
yeah.
Those aren't meat?
Yes.
Yes, that's meat, Leo.
They're the meat of something.
So we're going to put the cheese on the top, the bottom. We're going to put it in the middle. We're going to try it all different ways and really nail this emoji controversy down.
Did you have a correction you wanted to make? Yes. Something that we said?
So I said something stupid.
What? You?
Yes.
No.
I said all energy comes from the sun. It doesn't. And of course, we have a famous scientist in our studio, John Slonina, our studio manager, Jammer B. He says, well, Leo, what about nuclear power? That doesn't come from our sun. It comes from some other neutron stars many years ago exploding and making radioactive materials, and then we create power from fusion and someday fission, or fission and someday fusion. But so that's right, but that's not from the sun. And then he said, and what about geothermal? Gravity creates that, right? The pressure of the Earth's surface heats up the core, heats up water. It vents out, and we can make power from geothermal. So I stand corrected. This, you think everything else? Is there nothing else? We covered everything possible.
We have many scientists in the studio.
What about
right
baking
now?
Soda and vinegar? Where does the energy come from that? What is that?
Sun.
Okay. yeah, let's introduce our guests. This is fun. Mackenzie Leek is here. She's a computer science PhD student at Stanford University. An Truong, she is a research apprentice at the Adobe Research Creative Intelligence Lab. And together they've done something that's going to put many, many people out of work.
That's not the way they wanted to start this out. You're going to use AI to edit video. So I'm sure editors will have other jobs. Tell us about your project.
Yeah. So we worked on this project. There's four of us involved, me and An, and then postdoc Abe Davis and our advisor, Manish Agarwala, at Stanford. And so we all came together to work on this project to think about how we could create computational tools for assisting editors. So I'm going to say right off the bat, you know, we're not in the business of taking away jobs. We're actually hoping to make the process of editing easier and allow editors to focus on different parts of the process. So our tool does a lot of automatic labeling for videos. You input a scripted scene and several different video takes, and then we produce these edits automatically and allow editors to work with these different styles and try out these different types of edits very quickly. So that right now, this is a research prototype that we presented at the SIGGRAPH conference earlier in the summer, and that's where we are right now.
Well, I hope you got an A+, because this is really impressive.
Thank you.
So how long, I mean, how much does it speed up? How long does the whole process of editing take?
So using our system, we focused on these short dialogue scenes. So the output is generally 1 to 2 minutes, and we start with about 15 minutes of input footage for a lot of the scenes that we've been working with. And for something on that scale, we take 2 to 3 hours to do all of the automatic labeling. So we have this process where we split the different videos into different components based on the content that the actors are speaking. We do some identification of faces in the scene and other information in the videos. And all of that is fully automatic and takes about 2 to 3 hours. And then after that, the edits that we produce take just 2 to 3 seconds.
What?
Actual. So yeah.
But that's nice, because that means you can try different things,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly. So the editor can take time to try out different combinations with these high-level goals in our system, and then produce the edits very rapidly and go through and try them out.
It's basically the same as, you know, when I was in college and I was doing editing, we had the big giant tapes. And
you have,
you know,
to do
we'd
the ingest,
to, you
right?
You know, and now yeah. It's much easier now. And, you know, before there were people taping the tapes together and everything. Yeah. So it's just a natural progression.
That was always the worst part, digitizing your content.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you still have to digitize, but the computer, then kind of the AI munches on it for a little while to figure out who the characters are, who's talking, all the different shots you have. It can use wide shots, two shots, master shots, singles. It can use all of those?
Right, exactly. And it really benefits from having those different camera angles.
Yeah, because you don't want to just, oh, now it's Mackenzie, now it's Ed, now it's Mackenzie. That would be boring. Nobody wants that, you know?
Yeah,
can
exactly.
You do styles of editing?
Yeah. So we in our system, we've encoded some of these common conventions in cinematography. And then we let users kind of select those different items together and compose them together to produce styles and to try out different ways of editing a particular scene.
Should we take a look at it? An has it here.
Yeah, I'll show a couple of different styles.
So you could have the tool. Quentin Tarantino style, and you could. It's amazing. That's amazing. All right, let's see.
All right, so are we showing?
Yeah.
Great.
So you can't buy this software right now.
No, this is just a research prototype.
Don't get your hopes up, kids.
Yeah. All right. So this is our interface. On one hand here, you see the script that the users input. And each line of this script corresponds with a row in this grid of clips. And basically what these clips are there are different versions of like this line of dialogue being executed from different camera angles. And so what the user can do is they can use this thing we called an idiom builder to create an edit. And so I'll run you through a few different edits of this soap opera scene.
So cool.
Yeah.
This is an actual General Hospital scene.
Yes.
we had some actors reenact one of our favorites, a great classic, I would say, in the General Hospital sequence of events.
Yeah.
Is it Luke and Laura?
Lucky and Elizabeth.
Elizabeth are the Luke and Laura of the 20th century. Okay, yeah, good. 21st century.
But, you know, same plot line.
Same idea, I know.
All right, so on the left-hand side of our idiom builder, we have this collection of idioms, or basically rules that users can specify to say, you know, what kind of style of editing they want. In the middle, we would be able to see the collection of idioms that, you know, are currently being used. And then on the right, we have this generate button, which we click, and then in like 2 to 3 seconds, it'll generate an edit based on the idioms that we specified. Now, since we haven't specified anything yet, when I click the generate button, it'll just pick me a random clip for each row.
Oh.
So we can
look how fast that was.
Yeah.
But that will follow the dialogue.
Yes, this follows the dialogue. So, I mean, let's watch it and see what we've got.
Elizabeth, something's wrong. Just tell me what it is.
Well, Lucky, I'm pregnant.
I just can't. Look, we are getting married.
You need an idiom.
We need an idiom. All right.
It's going 2-1, 2-1, 2-1. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, I think there are actually two problems in these first three lines. I mean, one is that there's a jump cut because it's cutting between views that are too similar.
Right.
And so to do that...
is that what that was? Okay,
yeah,
so the dialogue continued, but there was a jump cut.
Yeah, it was a jump cut. Yeah, so in order to get rid of the jump cuts, we can add this avoid jump cuts idiom.
Oh.
And then you can see, like, in the second line, Elizabeth is a character speaking, but you can't actually see her face in the shot. And so to make sure that we can always see the speaker's face, we can add the speaker visible idiom.
This is really cool.
And then we'll hit generate.
So that immediately fixes the problem.
Yeah. So we can watch it again. Let's see what we've got.
Elizabeth, something's going on. Just tell me what it is.
I can't. No, I just can't.
Look, we are getting married.
Okay, so I think this is pretty good, but now you can see that, like, the first shot is a close-up of Lucky, and a lot of times we want to actually start with a wide-angle shot instead to establish the scene.
Yes.
So we can do that by adding a start wide idiom.
Oh, nice.
And then I'm also noticing that some of the performances are, like, dragging on, so I can add this performance fast idiom to prefer sharper deliveries.
Oh. So you can actually pick takes. Based on how fast they spoke,
yes.
Things like that.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
So,
can you put better acting in?
I was thinking about better dialogue, perhaps.
We'll have to work on that, yeah.
Also, I should mention that while we've only been looking at the first few lines here, the system's actually been automatically propagating all of our preferences to the rest of the script.
Interesting.
Yeah, so we can see what that looks like.
To save time, sure.
Yeah.
Elizabeth. Something's going on. Just tell me what it is.
I can't. I just can't.
That was a pretty good cut there.
Look, mm-hmm. We are getting married. We are going to have to trust each other and work through some of this stuff.
Okay, just stop. I'll tell you because I don't want to lie about it anymore.
Would you think that an editor might do the rough cut this way and then tune it a little
yes.
bit? Is that the plan?
Yeah, so you can actually export this video
that
we're showing
that
into an EDL.
List.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
So I can
just,
totally see
happened.
People doing a rough cut
things like that.
Quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Just to get a rough cut. I mean, they frequently do this in movies, a very rough cut just to get an idea of what they've got.
Yeah.
Right. Wow. Yeah. Absolutely. And we tried this out with a professional who wanted to do exactly that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You are sleeping.
That's the most painful part. It's like going through all your takes.
You're supposed to marry me, Elizabeth.
So I know when...
Who's that?
Brother.
Oh, thank God. He's got a gun. Are these friends of yours?
Yeah. They are friends of one of our collaborators. They're,
I love it.
They're actually a professional acting company.
They're very cute.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. They really nail the soap opera style.
I thought they got the style very nicely done. Yeah. This is amazing. I mean, it's easy to say, but the amount of kind of, it's not intelligence, but what looks like intelligence going on. It's really impressive. That's a hard thing to do.
Did
the folks at SIGGRAPH go crazy? Like, some of them must have booed you, thinking, oh, we're out of work.
No, it's funny. It's one of those things where I think, you know, the initial reaction is often, you know, robots are taking our jobs, kind of thing. Yeah. And I think when you talk to people more about it, actually, I mean, in all fairness, you know, the only AI in this really is some of the labeling is built on top of AI tools, but we wanted to make sure that we allowed for a lot of creative control for the user. So even though we're generating these edits or in some cases, like you said, rough cuts automatically, you know, we really do want the user to select the idioms and to try the different parameters and to export into Premiere or into any editing software and try out and work from there. And so I think that, you know, we're very careful about that balance. We want to make sure that, you know, maybe organizing the takes this way and helping you.
It's a tool.
It takes away some of the kind of more boring and tedious parts of the process, but lets you still
That's
have
AI at its
control.
Best. It's a partner with a human intelligence to do the menial, less interesting stuff. So the human can focus on the thing that really makes a difference in the creative process. Have you showed this to actual movie editors and asked them what they thought?
Yeah. We that's something that's really wonderful about working on research in this space is that we do talk with creative professionals about it. We had a professional editor hand edit a version of this scene, and it took him a couple of hours to do.
Yeah.
And also take a look at the results from our output.
It's the least fun part of any of this stuff. Absolutely. Is that day, you know, that grind of editing it out. Mm-hmm. You'd obviously have to have dialogue. You couldn't do this without dialogue, right?
Right. So currently we're able to do this because we have the dialogue that gives us the structure of the scene. So we're able to use these tools to align our audio from our videos with the text script to give the structure. But it's definitely something that we're interested in, is thinking about how we can get that kind of structure from other types of videos.
And this is an ongoing project. You're still working on it. What's next?
Yeah. So all of us are continuing to work on video production tools. It's an area of research that our lab is really excited about, and with this project and with others as well.
graphics.stanford.edu/papers/roughcut if you want to see your paper. Yes. You call this Rough Cut?
So that's our
internal code name.
I like it.
You know, reminds us there's always work to be done still on it.
Yeah, but also that's one of the things you do in an edit process. You do a rough cut, and I think that this is a perfect way to get that rough cut done efficiently, quickly. Does it do face recognition? Is that how it knows who's who? Or
So the software itself identifies landmark points on the face, so it gets a number of points around different features, and then we use that to figure out how large the faces are in the video. So that's how we get a sense of whether it's
close
a wide
up,
shot
yeah,
or and how many yeah. people are in there. And then we actually use the mouth motion to figure out who's speaking on screen. Oh. So we wrote an algorithm to use that information as well.
Isn't that cool?
Mouth movement algorithm.
I need one of those. Mackenzie Leak is a computer science PhD student at Stanford University. Thanks for joining us. An Truong is a research apprentice at the Adobe Research Creative Intelligence Lab. Obviously, Adobe had something to do with this as well. Of course, they make Premiere, which is the editing program we use. We're going to see this in Premiere soon, so.
No. Like I said, this is just a research prototype.
Adobe wants you to know your jobs are safe, boys and girls. Really, really cool. You know, it's getting a smell a lot like Arby's in here. I don't... I think the burgers are on the way. We are going to get to the bottom of the great cheeseburger emoji debate. Did you see that the emoji consortium, the Unicode consortium, and I imagine our friend who visits us from time to time...
Jeremy Burge,
to talk about it. There is a huge battle raging over the poop emoji. There are people who want to create a happy poop emoji to go with... Or is it a sad poop emoji to go to the happy poop emoji?
I think sad, yeah.
We have to get to the bottom of that.
Or not.
Or maybe we shouldn't. And by the way, another correction. There are three kinds of energy that don't come from the sun. Right? Because tides. Tides don't come from the sun. They come from the moon. That's the moon.
The sun's involved.
Huh?
The sun is involved.
The sun is involved.
Yeah.
It doesn't create it, but it's like the dad. It doesn't make the baby, but it's involved. It's Never mind.
Something like what? That.
Yeah, fair enough.
I did an excellent triangulation interview with Gretchen Bakke, who wrote The Grid. Read that. It tells you all about the electrical grid and power.
That
and,
is a great book, yeah.
Yes. So triangulation.
Is that already aired?
Yes.
So we can go back.
Twit.tv/TRI.
Yes. We've been having so much fun with triangulation. You did some more on Friday, right?
I didn't. Jason and
did
Padre
too?
Did.
And
yes.
Padre, okay.
Yeah. Scott Galloway. And
Scott Galloway, mm-hmm. who did The Four. That's the new book in which he says it's just a matter of time before government intervenes between Google, Facebook. Who are the other two in The Four? Is it Microsoft and Apple? Amazon is probably
Amazon
one of the
and
four.
Apple, not Microsoft.
There's five, really. You got to include Microsoft. Thank you very much, Mackenzie and Ann, and good luck with Rough Cut. I think that's really cool stuff. Coming up, cheeseburgers. But first, a word from Tracker. You know, it's funny. When I had turned on the separation alerts on my phone with my Tracker, and as soon as I left my office, my phone went doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo, and I went, oh, I left my keys behind. The Tracker is the coolest thing ever. It is a Bluetooth device about the size of a quarter. Actually, they have two different trackers, the anodized aluminum Tracker Bravo and the new Tracker Pixel, which has those LEDs on the edge that light up that keep you from losing your most valued possessions. We spend on average, according to Newsweek, 55 hours a day. I'm sorry, minutes. Hours would be hard. 55 minutes a day searching for stuff we know we own, we know we have, but we cannot find, like the remote, the keys, the bicycle, the backpack. I keep a tracker on my most valued possessions, my keys, on my briefcase, my luggage when we travel. And what's great is you turn on the Tracker app on your phone, you pair the tracker to your app, and now you'll see a map on the Tracker app of where your stuff was last seen. Furthermore, you could turn on the separation alerts, so when you leave your keys behind, your phone yells at you. When you leave your phone behind, your keys yell at you. There's a button on the tracker. You press, it'll make your phone ring, even if it's silenced. So these are all great for, you know, like you lost it in the house, right? You can press a button on the phone that'll make your keys go bleep, 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 and the lights will light up. But what happens if you leave your keys? Let's say you go to the beach. Your keys fall out of your pocket. You walk away. If you remember, when you get home, you can look at the tracker, and it'll show you on the map where your keys are. You go back to the beach. But what if, and this happens all the time, some good Samaritan comes along, finds your keys, and says, oh, I better bring this somewhere. Let me bring it to Argentina in case the guy came from Argentina. Well, now you don't know where your keys are because the Tracker app says the last time I saw them, I was on the beach. But here's the beauty part. This is Tracker. They have the largest crowd locate network in the world. Over 5 million trackers are out there. I turned on the crowd locate here, the notifications on my phone. 2,272 people in right around here have the Tracker app. So that means even in Argentina, even in Timbuktu, when somebody walks by your keys with the Tracker app on their phone, the Tracker app on their phone sees the keys because it's Bluetooth LE, so there's no pairing. It just sees them. And it sends you a notification with a map saying, I just saw your keys right here. You will never lose anything again. The Tracker Pixel is light. It's tiny. It's affordable. The Tracker Bravo be suitable for a pet because you can engrave the phone number on there, put a picture on it if you want. They have a waterproof cover. Go to thetracker.com/NSS, thetracker.com/NSS, and you can save 20% off any order. Even if you've bought trackers before and you want a new one, this will say this is good too. Save 20% off your order today. thetracker.com/NSS. I love this thing. And if I could figure out a way to put a tracker on my AirPods, I would. I guess I could just, I like glue it on, I guess.
Yeah, it has adhesive on it.
I could put some Sugu.
Mm-hmm.
Put some Sugu and have it, it'd be ugly, but I lose my AirPods all the time, so I really need that. Megan, I'm so excited. Doesn't it smell good?
It smells like emoji in here.
It smells like cooking emoji. So, how do you make a cheeseburger? Do you do it as Apple does with bun, tomato, cheese, patty, lettuce, bun? Lettuce on the bottom? That's weird.
No.
Do you do it as Facebook does? This is the normal way. Bun, lettuce, tomato. Now that's wrong too. Cheese, patty, bun. I do it bun, lettuce. No, bun, tomato, lettuce. These are all the different cheeseburger emojis.
I think Twitter has it right.
Twitter. Let's look at Twitter. Where is Twitter?
But that's there not it one is. Of our choices.
Yes, that's the way I do it.
That's the normal way.
Sesame seed bun, although it's a paucity of sesame seeds. Sesame seed bun, tomatoes, lettuce, cheeseburger bun. That's the correct way to do it, in my opinion. But as you look at Google, look closely at Google, please, because it's messed up.
Google, don't be evil, except in the
bun, lettuce,
cheese on the bottom.
Tomato, that's wrong to begin with. Then the bun, then the burger, then the cheese? By this all started, by the way, with this tweet, Thomas Bechtel, who says, I think we need to have a discussion about how Google's burger emoji is placing the cheese underneath the burger while Apple puts it on top. That, by the way, then led to CEO of Google, Sundar Pichai, tweeting, we're going to get on this on Monday if the internet can agree what's right. Then somebody pointed out, have you seen the Google beer emoji?
The
beer
foam
goes
foam.
Halfway up the mug, stops, and then there's a foam head.
Yeah.
There's an air gap. Google, what are they doing? Who's doing their emojis? Anyway, we thought there's one way to solve this. See? What the heck is that?
It's like they don't even understand how beer works.
They're aliens. I don't think they come from this planet.
They don't drink alcohol.
They don't drink alcohol or eat cheeseburgers, apparently.
I guess not.
So what we've... This is crazy. By the way, I picked a bad day to fast. I wasn't going to eat today, but we've got to do a taste test. So
we have to.
Science. So Colleen is here. She is our senior producer type person, supervising producer. What do you do here? I don't know.
Nothing.
Everything.
So Sundar's waiting for you to weigh in.
So we have to weigh in. Right. So here, so we're going to put these googly eyes on so we can't see the order of the stuff. And we're going to do a taste test.
Okay.
We're going to do the Facebook, the Google, and the Apple way, but we won't know. And then we will just say which one we like better, right?
Exactly.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. So everyone at home can see which one it is. That's perfect. And then, Megan, I'm going to hand you one.
Oh.
There
don't
it
touch
is.
Me.
Megan, no, is that you?
No. This is for you, Leo.
Okay.
Turn
your hand over.
Okay. There's no plate, by the way.
There's no plate. I've been handed
there's
a burger.
There's a napkin.
By the way, be careful how you touch it because you could feel where the lettuce is. So don't touch too much in the middle, right?
Good job. When do we eat?
Okay.
And where's my mouth?
One, two, three, go. Taste it.
I can't find my mouth.
You're holding it upside down, Leo.
Mm.
Should I hold it right set up? Does that matter?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Is there cheese on this at all?
You can eat as much as you like. Oh. Just know that you have to eat two more, or taste two more.
Okay. I think this is cheese. Should I say it out loud?
No. What should we do?
It's delicious. So tell me what you think, which one you think it is, and we'll decide. Everybody at home knows which one you're tasting, and now you have to identify the one that you think you're tasting. And we'll decide.
Tell us the order.
Cheese, tomato, burger,
lettuce.
Okay.
that's not bad.
I have no idea.
Okay. All right.
All I know is it's delicious. Okay.
Oh, good. Okay. All right. We'll put that one back.
I have to say something, though, don't I? I think that is the Facebook one.
Okay. So we'll go like this.
Still Megan? My shoulder. Still
is
my
that
shoulder.
You? Is that you, Megan?
Still okay. My shoulder.
All right, so now we're going to move on to the next one.
Oh, you took the burger away.
I did.
Very superstitious.
Okay,
right on the wall.
Here's the next one. All right. Okay, perfect. All right.
I'm holding my hand. Please, sir, can I have some more?
There we go. Okay,
more?
Here we go. There
more
you go,
burger.
Okay.
There's a ham. Oh, now you give me a napkin.
I gave you a napkin because I think you're right.
I had a napkin.
Genteel.
Before.
I didn't have one before, but I'm a very tidy eater.
Okay, there we go, Megan. All right.
I don't know how I need to use the napkin.
I can't find my mouth.
Okay.
Okay. No. First of all, I think based on the sesame seeds.
Oh, sesame. There's no sesame seeds on this. What is he doing?
No. You've got them too, Megan.
I think I dropped some on my dress. And it feels... What is that?
Okay.
This one...
Okay.
The burger's definitely on the bottom.
Oh, I'm not supposed to touch it with my hand. I'm just supposed to...
So what is it? Facebook, Google, and Apple?
Uh-huh.
It's an Apple burger.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
So by the process of elimination.
You can tell by the OLED screen?
Yeah.
All right, Megan, what's your guess?
No finger ID.
Which one do you think it is?
This one is definitely Twitter.
Twitter's not in a bunch.
We're not doing Twitter.
Google. Oh, okay.
Ooh. So you think that's the one with the cheese on the bottom,
mm-hmm,
huh?
Mm-hmm. Mm. I can feel it with my mouth.
You know what? These are very good burgers. I must say, these are delicious. Mm-hmm. Is this Nyman Ranch beef?
Mm-hmm. No,
it's very tasty.
It's a beast burger.
It's a beast burger.
Mm. Okay. Mm. All right.
I think it might be made out of buffalo.
One more. Mm-mm. I was promised this wasn't made from an animal.
Pesa. Yes, okay. You're a pescavegetarian,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't eat eggs or cheese.
I think this is probably our best episode yet. Okay.
Well, it's good for us. I never got to eat on the show. This is great.
Okay, Leo.
Have we ever done a taste test on the show before? I don't think so.
I got to eat the Impossible Burger.
I'm so jealous. I still haven't had one of those. All right.
Okay, Megan, this is for you.
So this is, by process of elimination, if I was correct on the other ones, this is the Google Burger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
By the way, there are four ways that you can get energy on the Earth. Right. I'll be honest with you. Can I be honest with you?
Mm-hmm.
I don't taste cheese on any of them. Mm. You think they're punking us?
No. Oh. My last one had cheese on the bottom. This one is...
Can you use stronger cheese next time? My problem is I haven't eaten anything in days, so it all tastes
that's probably
fabulous.
Better.
What's the order, do you think?
I think this is lettuce, tomato.
I can't tell at all.
Patty. No, wait. Lettuce.
Can I
tomato,
lick it?
Cheese, patty.
Oh, I figured out how to do this. You just lick it. I had pizza. I had a say. I had a say. Okay, where's the other one?
Here's another one.
See, I need to go back in time.
Okay, there,
wait, that's it,
there
right?
Go.
That's it. Those are the three.
I can't tell the difference. Can you tell the difference?
Mm.
Okay. Oh, that's cold.
All right, so what's your guess, Megan? For the final one, Apple, Google, or Facebook?
Apple.
That's not really germane. What's germane is which one tasted the best.
Well, that's what we'll do afterwards. At the end, we'll decide.
I have to remember that, too. All
mm-hmm.
right.
Okay, let me take another bite of this one. This one was pretty good.
I like the first one. Whatever the first one is, that's how you should make your cheeseburgers from now on.
Mm-hmm. So, I like this one the best.
Okay,
right.
Apple.
Can we take off these blindfolds?
Yeah, Leah, which one do you think the last one was?
Well, there was one left. It was Google, according to my previous... Because, you know, there's only three,
sure,
right? You should have thrown in a fourth mystery.
A mystery burger?
What about the battery life of these burgers? How do they feel in the hand?
The hand feel?
How's the hand feel? How do they feel in the hand? Which would you choose?
Megan, is that you?
Stop me. Which would you use?
I don't know why.
That
cracks me up.
Yeah, I don't know why either. All right. Well, I think we have a winner.
Uh-oh, is it Megan?
All right. Time to take those off. Let's see.
I mean, Gwen.
I got them all wrong?
Megan,
I got them all wrong.
You got the one right. I made quite
the mess. You were correct. Wow. I couldn't, I'll be honest with you, I couldn't tell where the cheese was. Now, which one was best? I thought the first one was best. The first one was apple.
Apple. The first one was apple.
Oh.
Apple makes it almost right.
And there you can see
this one
the
was good.
Cheese
yeah.
on the bottom. And that made it hard, too, because then the lettuce and the top bun are sliding off because there's nothing mm-hmm. to ground them mm-hmm. to the bun.
Oh, that's an interesting problem. Mm-hmm.
That's what we were having that problem.
The last one fell apart. The last one was Facebook's?
Yeah.
So the Facebook way is a bad way, because there's no adhesive.
That's right. Probably what they're saying in their Senate hearings as well.
I think the Russians made this one. Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. By the way, did you know? I can't stop chewing.
What is this? These are like this something in there.
What we didn't tell Megan is we substituted her regular burgers with Beast Burgers. Those were completely vegetarian.
What?
I know. Look at that. Did you notice? That tasted actually
I thought
like
it
good.
Tasted really
if
good.
You hadn't told me, I wouldn't have known. It's beyond meat.
It's quite
it's
good.
It's vegan. Do you know what was in there?
Something that looks like this.
Pea protein isolate.
Peas. That's what it is, a pea.
Oil blend. It wasn't apparently isolated. Methyl cellulose, carrageenan, yeast extract, maltodextrin, caramel color, potassium carbonate, natural flavoring, spices, salt, vegetable nutrient extract blend, spinach, broccoli, carrot, tomato, beef, shiitake mushroom, L-cysteine hydrochloride, beet juice powder. This stuff is worse than meat.
No, it's not.
But no cows died.
Yeah.
Just a bunch of carrageenan.
I love my job.
All right. Well, we've learned nothing here except that Megan is clearly has more taste than I do.
Mm-hmm.
Or you just got lucky because 1 in 3 isn't really very good.
No.
Did you know that Google that's beautiful. That's a lovely shot. Did you know that Google actually serves employees a real version of the Android burger emoji with cheese below the patty? Did you know that? That's how all in they are. Why didn't we have those? Those look good. Oh, see, because they melt the cheese on the bun. So it's like a grilled cheese or something. All right. There you go, Google. The mailbag coming up in just a second. Also, Jason Howell, who has got the Pixel 2 XL. He's got his first look. We did the iPhone 10. He's the host of All About Android. Are you going to do the trade thing that you did last year?
I think we will in January, yeah.
You're going to let him have your iPhone 10?
I don't know. It's your iPhone 10, so really, it's up to you.
I think we should steal Lisa's iPhone 10 and let him have
let
that
him
one.
Because he doesn't have a really great track record in terms of breaking phones. He's a wonderfully nice guy.
I don't want to let Jason have my phone. No way. No way. We will get Jason's look at in just a second at the Pixel 2 XL. But first, a word from our sponsor, Rocket Mortgage. If you're ready to buy or refi, the best way to do it, of course, you have to get a mortgage. Most people aren't writing a check for their new house. You got to get a loan. And you're going to want to go to the lender that is the best in the country. And that's going to be Quicken Loans. Number one, it's not me that's saying this. It's number one in customer satisfaction year after year after year, according to the J.D. Power Association. Number one in customer satisfaction in mortgage approval process. And then number one in mortgage servicing. So they're really great. You know, that's a given. What they've done is so cool that should make every geek happy. No longer do you have to go to the bank hat in hand with a box of paperwork. No longer will they ask you, as they did us when we bought our house last time, for more. Can we have more documentation? We need more documentation. Do you have the pay stubs from your job 20 years ago? What do you? Oh, it drove me crazy. We were faxing stuff for a month. Now, I'll just fire up my phone, rocketmortgage.com/NSS. You answer a couple of simple questions. You choose your rate, your term, your down payment. They crunch the numbers. They get all the financial information they need, not from you, but with your permission from your bank. So they don't even have to ask you for paperwork. And this all happens in seconds. And based on your income, your assets, and your credits, they will give you the home loans for which you qualify. You could do this. You could go to an open house, say, I love this house. Let's get a loan. And before you leave, show the realtor we're approved. At the end, they give you a button that says, you know, send me the approval letter so I can print it out and I can show my realtor. It's amazing. Rocket Mortgage. Apply simply, understand every step fully, and then mortgage confidently. Go to rocketmortgage.com/NSS. They're an equal housing lender, of course, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. We thank them for their support. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. rocketmortgage.com/NSS. The mailbag is next, but first, I'm dying to see this. Jason briefly showed me his Pixel 2 XL. I looked at the screen. I thought, that's not great. That's not great. But let's get his 5 best things about the Pixel 2 XL watch.
So, you want Google's latest and greatest phone, the Pixel 2 or 2 XL, which is what I have here, and you really don't care about the display issues that have been in the news all week. You think, blue tint, burn-in, I'll take my chances. Hey, Google extended the warranty on the device by a year, and that helps on that front. So if this is you, here are five things you should know that might get you particularly excited about this new device. Now, first of all, you will absolutely want to dive into Google Lens. And for now, you can only access that through the Photos app. You find a photo in your camera roll and you tap the Lens button. And Assistant will analyze that image and then pull back results that match the objects in the image. Could be very handy depending on how you use it. Eventually, this is going to appear within the camera app too, which will make it even more useful. Second, if you're a music buff, you'll want to jump into the settings and look for the Now Playing feature. Once that's activated, your new device will always be listening for any music that's playing in the background, wherever you happen to be. And if it hears it, that song will be identified on your lock screen. It's like an always-on Shazam. And Google says it made special software and hardware modifications on the Pixel 2, so it requires minimal processing and battery. You aren't likely to see this feature on any other phone. Third, a special software-enabled portrait mode on both the single rear-facing and front-facing cameras. That's thanks to machine learning and dual-pixel technology on these phones. And that will only improve as Google's about to activate the device's new Pixel Visual Core later this month. That's the company's first custom-designed coprocessor that is dedicated to image processing and machine learning. Fourth, Bluetooth has long been a sore spot for Google's phones, and they have a number of updates under the hood to make that better, including the newly announced fast pairing feature that'll make pairing supported devices relatively frictionless. You just turn on the supported device, and an alert will then appear right on the phone. You just tap to pair, and you're done. No more jumping into the settings for that. And fifth, and I'll admit I'm still getting used to this one, active edges. The frame of the new phone is squeezable, and doing so acts as a quick launch for Google's Assistant. The key here is dialing in the perfect sensitivity for the squeeze so it doesn't fire off when you pull your phone out of the pocket. And conversely, you don't have to strangle your phone to get it to work either. Also, as a bonus, free unlimited full resolution cloud storage of the pictures and videos that you take on the Pixel 2. That's the same as last year, but still an incredibly awesome extra. Those are a few reasons you might want to pick up the new Pixel 2 and 2 XL devices by Google. I'm Jason Howell, and you can catch me every week talking about these devices on All About Android, as well as Tech News Weekly here on twit.tv.
Thank you, Jason Howell. I have to admit it. I don't want to admit it. For the last 3 or 4 years, my daily drivers ended up being an Android phone. The most recently, the Google Pixel XL, which I really, really liked. The Galaxy S8 before that, the S7. I think the iPhone X is going to be my daily driver.
Is it because Google puts the cheese on the bottom of the burgers?
Yes, I can't bear that. Mm-hmm. No, this phone is perfect. It's the right size. It's a gem. It's beautiful. I'm really impressed. And the Face ID works really well. Boy, those burgers are not agreeing with me. I have to say. Megan, it's been fun. I'm glad you could be here for the Big Burger face-off. Now, we're back to work. It's time for the mailbag.
Okay.
I love how the mailbag... Did you put artificial intelligence in it? It turned to face me.
It's a robot.
Did you notice that? It was amazing. And here we go, the mailbag questions. Is there anybody in there? Nope. There's three of them.
Whoa.
That's unusual.
That is unusual.
That means you're going to get to pick. And I'll pick one, and then we'll save this for the kitty.
Okay.
All right. Starting with, I don't know which one's first because they weren't numbered.
Hmm.
Who should I do first?
Mine says email one.
No, it sounds like yours.
This is from Sarah. Sarah says, I'm going to start out running. I downloaded the Jeff Galloway app, and what I really need to know is how to hold my phone while I'm running. I vaguely remember you talking about some sort of pouch thing that went around your waist as you ran.
I keep my thumb on top when I'm running.
When you do?
That's how I hold the phone.
Like that. I do run holding the phone. I see a lot of people doing this. I did run holding the phone until I got the Series 3 watch.
Showing off her Hermes.
No, this is a fake $12 Amazon Hermes band.
It is the best recommendation for the Apple Watch Series 3, right? You have to have a Series 3, is you don't need your phone anymore. You need Bluetooth headphones.
Mm-hmm.
But before, when you carried the phone, how did you carry it? Did you do one of, were you a bicep strap person?
Up until the, I carried the 6 Plus for a while on my arm, and then it just became a little bit ridiculous. So there's
because they're big.
Yeah. There's the pouches that you can.
That's what she wanted to know about, the fanny pack.
Yeah, so I, Alex, I have a link to the Wirecutter, did a really great rundown of all the ways you can hold your iPhone, because, or your Android phone. There's so many different ways, and it really tells, that, you know, really has to do with what you like the most.
Yeah, some people wouldn't want something around their waist while they're running.
Yeah,
I would think,
yeah, right? But some people want to carry other things. The quad lock I've tried, that's the one there. But then you have to, you know, it was an old case, so once I upgraded, I didn't use that anymore.
It needs a special case.
This pouch, the Kona pouch.
Can you swim with that? Is it waterproof? That's pretty cool.
I don't think so, but it doesn't bounce
around. It's called AquaQuest Kona Pack.
And then this Ultimate Direction Jurex Essential Waist Pack is another one that they recommend. You know, the Wirecutter, they're great. They do so many.
That is pretty granular that they're rating ways to hold your phone while you're running. That's
pretty I mean, it's key.
Yeah.
I mean, but now when I, I can get, I don't know, I didn't really need my phone when I ran before because the old mouthwatch had GPS in it. But yeah, if you want to listen to music, then, you know.
Thanks to the Series 3, I don't even need to bring my phone to the gym anymore. It does everything I want it to do. The only reason I would want my phone is a case of an emergency call or something like that. And all of that will come on the, if you get the Apple Watch Series 3 with cellular. Mm-hmm. They make it without cellular, too. So that really is the best recommendation, but that's, you know, it's a whole new Apple Watch.
Mm-hmm.
Which, what, so you don't wear a thing anymore?
I don't wear a thing anymore, but I used to just hold it because I didn't like the pouch.
Right.
And then I had many armbands, but they mostly work around the case. And so, like, once you upgrade your phone, you have to get a different armband.
New armband,
But yeah, check out the Wirecutter's reviews. I know I have a lot of friends who use those waist belts.
This one's from Randy. Question 2. It's for you and me, Megan and Leah. With iTunes, and I don't know the answer, but I think you do. With iTunes no longer including apps, the new iTunes 12 doesn't have the App Store built into it anymore. And the App Store, actually, it has the App Store. It doesn't have your installed apps anymore, right? And the App Store in iTunes doesn't show what you've bought anymore. Is there some place to get a list? Oh, of all the apps I previously purchased. That's very useful when you get a new phone. If you do as you do, which is you don't, you install from scratch each time, right? You don't take the old phone settings. I just took the old phone settings, so it knew. But if you don't, it'd be nice to be able to go through a list and say, yeah, I think I do want to install that.
Right.
So can Randy print a list of apps on his phone that would help with his digital cleanse?
I know. You can get a list. It's in the App Store on your phone. Are you going to?
Oh, the phone App Store has it.
Yes. So you just click on apps there. I don't know where you want to.
Show Jerry.
There we go.
Show Jerry.
Do you want me to turn my... So, and then there's all... Okay, that is not... That's not my apps.
Whose apps are those?
That's... Hold on. Okay, I know how you do it. Okay. You go in the App Store, and then you go
I'm following along.
Me. Where's me?
Me is your head.
Hold on.
Oh, there, I got there, it. Here, there, I figured it out.
There we go.
There's your icon, and then it says purchased right there.
And then purchased, yeah. So there...
That's actually the best place for it because you could then go through all the apps that you don't have installed. They have all and not on this phone. This is how it used to be, right?
Yeah, so it's exactly that, and you can hide it or just scroll through.
So I could go through all the apps I don't have on this phone.
So
this would simplify the upgrade process if you did a clean install as you do.
It also shows what my kids have installed, too. So that
I see the family. I could see
what you installed.
I could see what Henry has installed, what my son has installed.
Yeah, so you go to your, go to the App Store, go press the icon of your face, and then purchased.
Oh, he's installed Road Trip and Road Trip 2. I never realized I could see what Henry's installed.
Yeah.
Tricky Shot.
Mm-hmm. Mm. What's Tricky Shot?
He has the McDonald's app.
Huh.
Huh. Huh. Henry? Zombie Frontier 3. Thief. Anyway, so there's a very handy thing. Now, this third one isn't a question. That's why it's not numbered. It's an update. This comes to us from...
Oh.
Where did I... Oh, no, I put it here. Hold on. I think I'm in burger shock. Update from George. Oh,
remember George?
You know, this is a great story. So George was our bearded prospector from Alaska who had installed the Journal app on his iPhone, and then he upgraded to iOS 11, and the Journal app hadn't been kept up to date by the developer. It was a 32-bit app, so as soon as he went to iOS 11, the Journal app is gone. Furthermore, his data is gone with it. So you had a suggestion for him.
Right, because you were ready to just write George off. You said, George, you got to be careful when you put your data in these third-party apps. And I said, no, Leo, we are going to help George. And when I say we, I meant the whole Internet.
The whole Internet.
We crowdsourced this on Twitter. A lot of people said, they found his LinkedIn page. They found his Facebook page.
The developers.
Yeah, not George. Yeah. George.
They doxed George.
We do have George's social security number. No. The developer, it was Mizuna.
Right.
We did show that.
We showed the website, but they went the step farther and found him.
Yes. And so there was a contact form, and I said, well, why not? And I said, hi, I'm trying to help someone who has their stuff on your Journal app and it doesn't work with iOS 11. And the developer wrote me back and he said, I'm so sorry, I'm not updating it anymore, I've moved on. But he sent me a test flight. The test flight is how you test
beta versions.
So this was a beta of Journals, which he created or had for whatever reason. And he sent it to me and said, here it is, you can test this, get all your data back.
Because it'll log in, it'll get your data. It'll work on his iPhone with iOS 11.
Yes.
Nice.
And then, so I sent that to George, and then the developer put George's email address in the test flight. This developer was very kind to do this. He obviously didn't have to do this. But, maybe people had been... Someone actually offered to go to his house because they lived in his neighborhood and found his address. Wow. So maybe that's why. I don't know.
George wrote, whoop, whoop. I was able to retrieve all the information I thought lost. Thanks to you, Megan, I will be sure not to trust a single means to store this information. In fact, I'm going to old school pen and paper, which is, frankly, a single means. But okay.
George, a man after my own heart,
that
with his
awesome
bullet journal. That's where I keep all my passwords. I'm just kidding.
Well, thanks very much to all the people who helped out. Thanks to, was that Mizuna? Thanks to the developer Mizuna for going the extra mile for George. And we're so glad it had a happy update. Mm-hmm. That's ending. That's really great.
I think we should do more of that. Help people where they think they can't be helped. Megan at twit.tv, send me your biggest problems.
Wow.
And Leo will open up his pocketbook to
yes,
solve them.
Yes, unless your problem involves buy me a house. We are concluding this episode before you give away anything more. Megan Maroney, you'll find her on this show as often as we could possibly get her, of course, on Triangulation, and every Tuesday on iOS Today with me. We do that at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern. You could find her underneath the infrared cameras. Did you get a nice tan from that iPhone 10?
Yeah. I think it got rid of a couple of my wrinkles.
Yeah, that's amazing the way that works. You can also see her Thursdays with Jason Howell on Tech News Weekly. It's so great to have you. Thank you, Megan.
Thank you.
Come back soon. By the way, I can't believe it. We just went through Halloween. You know what that means? Thanksgiving's next, the holidays. Time to get ready with our best of episodes, and we want your help for all the Twitch shows. If there was a moment you loved, you remembered, if it had anything to do with cheeseburgers, what you should do is go to twit.tv/best of. Give us all the information you can. Don't feel like you have to fill out everything. Whatever you know will help to help our editors put together a great best of episode at the end of the year. And those shows will air between the last week of the year, between Christmas, which is Monday, right, and New Year's, which is the following Monday, December 31st. So your help is graciously accepted. Thank you very much. Thank you also for watching this show. We do the new screensavers Saturday afternoons, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. Now, because this is it, daylight saving time ends on Sunday, we move the show back an hour. We fall back. That means we're UTC minus 8. So that means, if my calculations are correct, that would be 2300 UTC. Figure out what time it is locally based on that. That's next week, 2300 UTC. You know what? You don't have to do all the math. Just go to the website, twit.tv/NSS. You can watch previous episodes, download the current episode, or subscribe in your favorite podcast application to get each episode as it's pushed out after our automated artificial intelligence editors polish the show up with magic, sprinkle the AI dust on it. Thanks for joining us. Oh, and you know, we didn't have a studio audience this week, but if you're in town and you'd like to come by and visit, email tickets at twit.tv and we'll make sure there's a seat out for you. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time on the new Screensavers. Bye-bye.